You know, I'd like to wish all the fathers a happy Father's Day. And I can't overemphasize the importance of having fathers in our homes, especially homes that have young children in them. We need good Christian fathers who are good role models for the family. You know, I lost my dad when I was 15. But because I was involved in athletics, every coach that I had from that point forward stepped in and acted as a Christian role model. I was so blessed to have a good group of coaches that supported me the rest of the way. But for decades now in our country, we have seen that the key role in our family structure is diminishing. Statistics in 2021 showed that 90% of all the males in prison in the United States grew up in a fatherless home. So I said, I can't emphasize the importance of not just having fathers, but good Christian role model fathers in our homes. So thank you for being that figure that we need so desperately. Okay, I got a question for you this morning. How many of you can look back on your life, your whole life, and can pinpoint times or events that have happened that you would say that have played a huge role in your life and are a direct result of where you are now? So think about that, okay? This could be something that happened that you had no idea it was coming. It's just something that came out of the blue. Or it could be something that you have prayed about over a long period of time, and you've seen God bless your life in a special way. For me, I can tell you exactly when and where it was, okay? It was in April of 1957. I was 8 years old. And it literally, what happened to me, literally set the course for the rest of my life. It was a single, random act of kindness by a person that I had never met before in my life. Now, I'm going to tell this story, and Cindy always says, don't tell the long version. You'll bore those people to death. Okay, so I'm going to tell it as quick as I can, and hopefully you won't get too bored. But so I grew up in Austin, Texas, and up until the third grade, I guess, we lived over by the university. Okay, then we built a new house just west of the university. And so one afternoon, myself and two other little knothead boys were out in the front yard and we're throwing a football around. Okay, and I see this car coming down. It pulls over right in front of my house. This man gets out and he said, "Hey, you boys, come over here." Had no idea who it was, but this was in the day when you didn't have stranger danger. You know, you felt pretty safe. So we go over there, and he gets out of the car, and he introduces himself. He said, "Boys," he said, "my name is Darryl Royal." He said, "I've just been hired here at the University of Texas as a head football coach, and we just finished spring training." And he pulls out this green duffel bag from the back of his car, and he opens it up, and he pulls out an orange helmet. And he said, "I thought, you know, we're going to go to white helmets next year, and I thought you boys might like to have one of these." So, wow, that's pretty cool. And so then he said, "When we start practice in the fall, you guys are welcome to come anytime you want." So we thanked him, and he lived like four doors down from me. Okay, so he drives off, and I run inside and tell my mom, "Hey, I just met Coach Royal, and he said he needs me to be at practice every day next fall." So my mom said, "Well, we'll wait till your dad gets home and, you know, we'll talk about it." So my dad hadn't met Coach Royal, and he knew him. So he called him, and Coach Royal said, "Sure, that'd be great." So my mom would take me over there when school was out, drop me off. My dad would pick me up on the way home. Coach Royal kind of made me feel like they couldn't practice unless I was there. And I know I was a pain in the butt and I was just in the way. But Coach Royal gave me jobs to do. And one of them was about the second or third day I was there. He said, "Dean, why don't you go down with the punters and the kickers? Because they're down there by themselves all day. And he said, you can kind of shag up balls for them. Well, I didn't really know what that meant. I thought that meant go down there and catch them. Okay, so I'm 8 years old now. Okay, so I'm trying to catch punts off of these guys, and it's hitting me in the face and in the mouth. And so anyway, so I'll chase the balls down, and I'd take them back to them so they didn't have to chase them down. So little did I know that 12 years later, I would return punts and kickoffs for Coach Royal on two national championship football teams. But it was that moment, that one random act of kindness that set the course for my whole life. And I'll talk more about that as we go on. You know, having been in athletics all my life, I can look back at sporting events and I can pinpoint times in a game where something happened that decided the outcome of that game. 2 years ago, when Llano had a really good football team, we were going to play San Saba. It was like the, I don't know, maybe third or fourth game of the season. San Saba had a great football team. They were ranked in the top five in the state at that time. And Llano was undefeated at the time we played. And going into the last 2 minutes of the game, Llano was down by three touchdowns. They got going. They made a couple big plays, got a couple turnovers, and they end up winning the football game. Okay, so when that season was over, I asked one of their coaches, I said, what was the turning point of the season? He said, without a doubt, the last 2 minutes of the San Saba game. Because our team went on to have the best year in the history of the school. We made it to the semifinals and were undefeated until then. And so that's one example of you know, being able to look back and see things that can happen in a sporting event. And sometimes some of these things can be heartbreaking, and sometimes they can be the happiest moment of your life. But either way, they have a huge impact on our life, our families, our teams, or our jobs. Sometimes we may not recognize the impact at the time that the event occurs, but years later, you can look back and see it plain as day. Just like what happened to me with Coach Royal. I can look back now because when I went over there, that from the first day I was there at practice, I thought, man, this is the neatest thing I have ever seen. And so I went home and I told my dad, I want to play for Coach Royal, and then I want to be like Coach Royal. I want to coach. Well, I'm 8 years old. You know, who knows when they're 8 years old what they, you know, and I might have said that and nothing ever happened. Nothing ever come of it. But now looking back, I can see what a huge impact that it had. Sometimes we have some control over these events, and sometimes we have none. But God always has complete control over them. He sometimes creates the events to bless us, sometimes to lead us in a certain direction, or sometimes to discipline us. In Jeremiah 29:11, God tells us this. He says, "For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." So God's always working on these events, these things that happen in our lives. And a lot of times we don't recognize them when they happen. And sometimes God will answer our prayers and show us that His plans align with ours, just like mine did. Other times He may chuckle and say, "No, I've got something way better plan for you, and you could never imagine it in your wildest dreams." So we call these events any number of things, but I like to call them defining moments. The definition of a defining moment is an event which determines all subsequent occurrences, or another definition, a point at which the essential nature or character of a person or a group is revealed or identified. I want you to think back in your own life and see if you can specifically identify some of these moments, because I'm going to ask each and every one of you to stand up before you leave here today and tell us what that was. So be ready. But can you identify something that happened in your childhood, like me? Or maybe there is something that occurred maybe in high school, certainly a marriage, the birth of a child, or maybe the landing or losing of a job you've always wanted. But now in your life, there may be something going on right now in your life that will turn out to be a huge defining moment. So think about that. Is there something that you've been praying about or working on, or something that somebody has come to you to talk about that may turn into a defining moment? God is always at work in our lives. Some things He will reveal to us now. Others will be years in the making. Some people may look back on events in their life and call them coincidences. How many of you can say, I've got one, I've got a coincidence? And I believe there's a huge difference in, like, if two people have the same birth date, but they were born in different years, and maybe they got put together in the same job, and they share that with each other, and they say, man, what a coincidence. Okay. To me, that's what a coincidence is. But if God is involved in it in some way, if this is one of His plans for your life, then this should be called a God-cidence. It's not, if we don't believe that God is in control of every area of our lives, then things that happen to us are just random. You know, nobody had control over anything that happened to us. But give me another example of something that happened in my career that I look back on now, and people said, well, what a coincidence. I was coaching at Texas A&M, and we had a pretty good season. I think we won 8 games, and we went to a bowl game, and we beat Oklahoma State by like 30 points. And then right before signing date in February, they fired our head coach, which is pretty late in the season to be doing it. So most of the jobs that had come open had already been filled. And so I'm scrambling around. I got to figure out how I'm going to feed Cindy and the kids without a job. And so I got a call one day from coach at LSU. Yeah, I was a defensive coordinator, and he was a friend of mine. He said, hey, our head coach wants to talk to you about being our secondary coach. He said, are you interested? I said, well, absolutely I am. So they fly me down there. I interview for the job. Coach gave me an indication that I was the guy he was going to hire. So I'll go back home. 3 days later, hadn't heard from him. A week later, hadn't heard from him. I never heard back from the head coach at LSU. Not to say, hey, I'm sorry or what, nothing. So I thought, well, that's kind of strange, you know. So now I'm looking at, we're going into mid-April. I don't have a job. So I'm thinking, what in the world am I going to do if I can't find a job? And so about that time, I get a call from Coach Fred Akers, who is then the head coach at the University of Texas. Now, Coach Akers had been on Coach Royal's staff when I played there. And he was a punt returner in college at the University of Arkansas. So he coached me on punt returns. And he also coached defensive back. So, you know, I'd been friends with him for a long time. And he asked me, he said, do you have a job yet? And I said, no. He said, well, we're going to start spring training next week. He said, why don't you come over here and help us? I was still on salary at A&M, still driving an A&M car, which was kind of strange that I was driving to Austin to coach the University of Texas while I'm getting paid by Texas A&M. Anyway, so there's a guy by the name of Alan Lowry who was coaching the secondary, coaching the defensive backs. Alan and I had played together at Texas, so we were friends. So I go over there, and I'm not really helping him. I'm just kind of standing around watching. So I do that for 2 weeks. I'm trying to learn the terminology and so that if something came up, I could tell the kids something right. I didn't want to tell them something wrong. So after 2 weeks, I go home for spring break. And it's about the middle of the week, and I'm driving down the road, and I'm listening to this sports talk show out of Dallas. And a guy comes on there and says, well, news from the Dallas Cowboys camp today. He said, they have hired Alan Lowry to be the special teams coach at the Dallas Cowboys. So I'm thinking, man, what's going to happen now? So About an hour later, I get a call from Coach Akers, and he says, "Well, I guess you heard about Allen leaving." And I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "You are coming back next week, right?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "All right." He said, "You've got the secondary for the rest of the spring." So now I show up on Monday, and I'm the secondary coach, okay? Interim secondary coach. So spring training's over. I go home. Coach Akers calls me. "Hey, we want you to be on our staff." And most people would say, what a coincidence that was, that you just happened to be coaching there, and the guy you're working with, he leaves, and you get the job. What a coincidence. I don't think so. I don't know how long that had been going on in God's planning, but, boy, what great timing. And so I was so disappointed when I didn't get that LSU job, just crushed, you know. But as I look back, there's one of those things that was a huge disappointment that turned out to be one of the great blessings in my life, because I got to go back and coach at my alma mater. And so that's another incident that occurred in my life that there's no doubt in my mind whose hands were all over that. So if we believe that God is in control of all areas of our lives, then he has to be the creator of all defining moments. In the Bible, there are a number of major figures whose life stories are told, and in every case, we can see defining moments. So let's look first at a major figure from the Old Testament, a guy by the name of Joshua. So Joshua grew up as an Egyptian slave, and while Israel was held captive in Egypt, and Joshua became a servant to Moses, and then he became more like a personal assistant to him, and then he began his leadership training. And he became a military commander and led Israel to many victories. When Moses died, he would become the leader of the Israelites as they crossed over the Jordan River into the Promised Land. So first, let's look at Deuteronomy 34. I got enough light here. 4 and 5. You got that, John? So this is talking about the death of Moses now. Okay, so this is God talking to Moses. He's led him right there to the river, but he's telling him that he's not gonna cross over. So he says, "And the Lord said to him, 'This is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to your offspring. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there.' So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab." And then on down in 9, says, "And Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. So the people of Israel obeyed him and did as the Lord had commanded Moses." Okay. And now over in Joshua 1:1-9, and the title of this is God Commissions Joshua. It says, "After the death of Moses, the servants of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, 'Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I promised to Moses. But from the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, being careful to do according to all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may have good success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. I have not commanded you, be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened, and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So now Joshua is going to follow his friend and master as the leader of the Israelites. But what a way to start a new job, by having God speak to you and assure you that you would be successful and that he would be with you everywhere you go. So all of Joshua's life he had spent under Moses, who was the GOAT, the greatest of all time. And now he's going to succeed him, which was like he had been the head assistant coach for a long time. And now the head coach is retiring and he's stepping into that role. And he's a little bit nervous about whether he can perform and be as successful as his predecessor. But what a blessing to have God step in there and say, hey, you're going to be good. You're going to be good. You follow me and everything successful will come your way. So this was certainly a defining moment in Joshua's life. Okay, no doubt about that. So let's look at another one, the life of a man that was totally changed in one quick defining moment. We'll look at Acts 9, 1 through 22. Okay, this is a story I'm sure you know about the conversion of Saul on the road to Damascus. So it says, but Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any belonging to the way, which meant they were Christians, men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. Now as he went on his way, he approached Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven shone around him. So here he is. He's been persecuting. He's been chasing down Christians and either arresting them or killing them for a good part of his life. And now he's going back to get some more. But he's on his way, and this light from heaven shone around him. And falling to the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he said, who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But rise and enter the city, and you will be told what you are to do. The men who were traveling with him stood speechless, hearing the voice but seeing no one. Saul rose from the ground, and although his eyes were opened, he saw nothing. So they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. And for 3 days he was without sight, and neither ate nor drank. Now there was a disciple at Damascus named Ananias. The Lord said to him in a vision, Ananias. And he said, here I am, Lord. And the Lord said to him, rise and go to the street called Straight, and at the house of Judas, look for a man of Tarsus named Saul. For behold, he is praying. And he has seen in a vision a man named Ananias came in and lay his hands on him so that he might regain his sight. But Ananias answered, Lord, I have heard from many about this man, how much evil he has done to your saints at Jerusalem. And here he has authority from the chief priests to bind all who call on your name. But the Lord said to him, go, for he is a chosen instrument of mine to carry my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel. For I will show him how much he must suffer for the sake of my name. So Ananias departed and entered the house. And laying his hands on him, he said, Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road by which you came, has sent me so that you may regain your sight and be filled with the Holy Spirit. And immediately something like scales fell from his eyes, and he regained his sight. Then he rose and was baptized, and taking food, he was strengthened. For some days he was with the disciples at Damascus, and immediately he proclaimed Jesus to the synagogue, saying, he is the Son of God. And all who heard him were amazed and said, Is not this the man who made havoc in Jerusalem of those who called upon this name? And has he not come here for this purpose, to bring them bound before the chief priests? But Saul increased all the more in strength and confounded the Jews who lived in Damascus by proving that Jesus was the Christ. So two different examples here. We see Joshua, and he spends his entire life preparing for the job that he inherited. Whereas Saul, he's just bopping down the road one day and he gets zapped. And in an instant, he is converted. And so we see that Saul became Paul, and he went on to become the greatest missionary in the history of the world, and he wrote 13 books of the Bible. I would call that a pretty defining moment in his life. But two different examples of how God's planning and timing works out. Most of the moments that we experience in our short time here on earth will only affect our lives while we are here on earth. We may not have a moment when God speaks to us as he did Joshua and Paul, but we all have an opportunity to choose whether or not we will accept Christ, which is the defining moment of our lives. Our salvation moment is the only moment that will affect us for eternity. Our time here on earth is a precious gift from God, and the way we use our time reveals our priorities. God gives us life, but doesn't tell us how long we will have it. Our priorities during our time here should be that we make that decision to accept Christ at the earliest possible age so that we can spend the rest of our lives impacting other people for Christ. We have been extended an invitation, and all we have to do is accept it. You know, if you accept Christ on your deathbed, that's great, and you're going to go to heaven, and you're going to spend eternity with him. But the thing that you miss out on is the pleasure that you derive from helping somebody else experience Christ. And you don't have to be a missionary. You don't have to be a Bible scholar. All you got to do is tell somebody else what God did in your life. And that can lead them to accepting Christ also. But if you wait to make that decision, you miss out on all those opportunities. So, where are you this morning? Have you already accepted the invitation, or are you still kicking the tires and thinking about it? I'm going to call the band back up as I finish this out here. Both of you. How many of you can spell procrastination? I had to look it up. But procrastination is a big word that means to intentionally put off doing something that needs to be done. Any of you at that point where you're procrastinating, you know, accepting Christ? So God wants you to know him. But sometimes even our best intentions get sidetracked by excuses. Man, can we come up with excuses? I'll do it later. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it next week. I'm not ready to pull the trigger right now. It's almost like hitting life's snooze button. Every day we get up with the opportunity to do something about it, and we hit that snooze button, go right back to sleep and never think about it again. But you see, if we die before we have made that decision, then our decision is no. We will not accept Christ. I know a lot of people that think that they're saved, but they've never really asked Christ to come into their lives, you know. And they tell you, I go to church every Sunday. I've gone to church all my life. I'm in Bible studies four nights a week. I know the Bible. I've memorized the Bible in 18 different languages. I tithe 90% of my salary, and I'm a good guy. I mean, I'm a good guy, and that should count something. Okay, I've done a lot of good deeds. Well, I hate to tell you, but none of those things will save you. Let's look at Romans 10:9. God tries to make it as simple as He can, which is good. It was really good for me because that's what it took for me to understand. So this is it in a nutshell. You don't have to memorize Bible verses. You don't have to go be a missionary. You don't have to sit on the front row at church and give all your money. This is all you got to do right here. It says, because if you confess with your mouth, what's that mean? You're speaking it, right? You're asking. You're accepting. If you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised Him from the dead, you will be saved. Period. Let's stand.